This is Father Ted, and you are listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu Podcast.
Welcome, everybody, back to the Bunker Podcast. My name is Father Ted, and I'm with you again this week with another wonderful guest, a good friend of mine, Professor Mike Iviato of Von BJJ. I've known Professor Mike for probably as long as I've been doing jiu-jitsu. I met him when I was a white belt. About 5.5 years ago. He was one of my early professors at Rev. And we've been friends ever since. I really respect him. He's a second degree black belt. And he's, as I said, he's running his own gym up in Vaughan, Ontario. And it's really, really excited to have him on the podcast. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you, Father Ted. Do you mind if I call you Ted or Father Ted? Which one do you
You can call me whatever you want. I don't care. Whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah, I think you and I met around 5.5 years ago. So close to six. I thought it was about six. And I met you at Rev, right?
Yes, yes. I was.
Yes.
Well, actually, interesting story there. Because like I remember you were coming in because, you know, I know you were teaching. Rev used to have two locations, right? They used to have the Vaughan location. And you were there because you're up in Vaughan. And I remember you used to come in and do like kind of guest teaching on, I think it was once a week, I think, right? Down at our location in North York. And so that's where I met you. And I met you, I was just like a couple months in, so I didn't know anything. And basically I remember that the very first class you taught, I was like so new. And I remember you rolled with me and like literally, and you know, people know that I'm like 6'4". And I'm like 300 something pounds. Back then, I was like 370. I was really, really big. And you know, you're a smaller guy.
Smaller is an understatement, you know.
But I remember like we rolled together and like literally it was like half a minute he took my back and choked me out. And I'm like, what is this magic?
No magic at all. I didn't want to be underneath you because I didn't want to be crushed, you know.
Yeah,
but it was an interesting time.
That was my first experience, but good times. And so now it's almost 6 years later, and you own your own club up in Vaughan.
Yes,
Vaughan BJJ. That's we'll get into that. But I guess the first question I would like to ask is like, because you've been doing it for a long time, right? First of all, where are you from?
Originally, I was born in the Philippines, moved to Queens, New York when I was about 9 years old, then lived there until I was like 17, 18 years old, and then moved to Toronto, Canada.
I didn't know you were in Queens. That's crazy. I was in Yonkers, New York, just north of Manhattan, for 2 years when I did my master's at a school there.
Nice.
So I know New York quite well, and I know Queens. That's crazy. So what made you come out to Toronto?
I guess it's because of the free healthcare during that time, because of the fact that my parents had six children, basically, and try paying for hospital bills or anything like that in New York at that time when you have six children, right? So it was kind of, it was a wonderful time, I guess. Growing up in New York City. And so that's what made us move to Toronto, Canada, basically for a better life other than living in New York. And New York was a real rat race. And I noticed that now these days, Toronto's starting to become like that, right? So
yeah, unfortunately. I agree with you. It's looking more like New York, and it's just as expensive these days.
Yes, it is. The quality of life of living in Canada back then was amazing. Now, slowly and surely, all the benefits and all the wonderful things that we take for granted in Canada is slowly disappearing, right? So,
yeah, unfortunately. Had you started BJJ in New York, or did you start in Canada?
Surprisingly, it was in New York when I was introduced to jiu-jitsu first time, like real Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And it was through my older sister's ex-boyfriend. And he was doing jiu-jitsu at that time. I was doing taekwondo. And I never really liked jiu-jitsu because of the fact of the grappling, the close proximity of it. But and I kicked him in the head and he fell down. And I'm like thinking, yeah, jiu-jitsu doesn't work. And
Yeah.
then that was like a while ago. And he would take me down and I would say, like, come on, this is not fighting. And we would get back up, which was like not realistic because truthfully, the moment you're down, someone has you pinned, he ain't letting go until you actually concede, right? So, but then that was the time. And then I saw, what's this? UFC, the real UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championships at back then,
Yeah.
where I saw Hoyt Gracie practically manhandle everybody else, submit everybody else, and I didn't really like it or something. I didn't really, it didn't resonate to me. I thought it was cheap, you know. I was an avid striker fan until it actually happened to me. But I saw UFC and I was intrigued by it. I wanted to know what this person was doing and how, and I thought that Kung Fu MMA, Kung Fu or striking arts would be more beneficial. It is good. It is very, very beneficial. I think it's an effective type of martial art, but not a lot of people can actually develop a knockout power or basically stay on their feet for too long without getting clinched.
Sure.
So
No,
that's
nice.
what me, yeah.
So you got exposed there, but did you start training there or did you start training in Canada?
No, it's only in Canada in 2007 where I totally embraced jiu-jitsu.
Where did you start training?
I started training with Professor Marco Costa at a small taekwondo gym in North York around I think it was Marley and somewhere Marley and Lawrence, you know, somewhere around there, Lawrence and Marley. About it's a small taekwondo school, and I used to remember that we at that time we had the mats on the side. We had to take them off and then place them down onto the floor, and at the end of the class we have to wipe them all up and then stack it back in the corner again. We did that for at least I think about 3 or 4 months until the owner of the taekwondo school basically just said, you know what, just leave them on the floor and we'll work on that, and we'll also do taekwondo and jiu-jitsu on it.
Yeah, that was the early 2000s, right? So it was like that was
Well,
like a
not early 2000, but basically 2007, right? So yeah,
Yeah,
I
so
guess that's
that's
early. Yeah,
yes.
that's within the first 10 years, 10, yeah,
Yeah.
first decade of 2000.
It doesn't seem like for us, because like, okay, I'm 44 now too, so like that's not long ago for me either. You know,
Exactly.
2007, like 2006, I got married. I was in New York 2004 to 2006, so that's not long for me and you. But like, we're 2025 now, so that's actually like, you know, that's 20 years. That's
That's
almost
a
20
long
years
time.
ago of jujitsu, right, in
Yes.
Toronto.
That's close
So.
to 20 years, right?
And you know, and that's what people don't realize is that back then there weren't as nowhere near as many schools as there are now.
Yep.
It was still kind of, even though it's the 2000s, it was still fresh in Canada and
Very, very
especially
fresh.
Toronto. Yeah. So.
Most of my family didn't like what I was doing. Most of the people didn't understand what I was doing either. Basically, they think of the jiu-jitsu to be, I don't know, not a real martial art, I guess, for them. They consider it more of like wrestling or more like judo. Well, even judo wasn't really popular back then, you know, even
Yeah.
though it's like in the Olympics, not a lot of people that I knew actually practiced judo a lot. So maybe I was hanging out with the wrong crowd anyways, because of the fact that nobody that I knew really learned how really knows how to fight.
Yeah. So you started there and then and you were there, like, were you there all the way up through all your belts or just like your partial journey?
All my belts, I got it under one professor, which is
Sure.
Michael. I was loyal to him. Until now, I'm still, he's like one of my best friends.
Sure.
also one of my mentors. Hard guy to please, hard guy to learn from, because basically he was from the old school of the Franco-Bering days, if people these days don't know the pioneers of jiu-jitsu within Canada and Toronto, Marco's one of them in regards to being, I guess, one of the hard asses in jiu-jitsu, really, really good guy, really, really technical as well, and also has a knack of like fighting. He's not just a jiu-jitsu guy. He was also a striker. He was into MMA. He competed in it as well. He trained with a lot of good people, such as Shaw Franco, Richard Nanku, Matt McDonald. He also with Antonio Carvalho, which was in the UFC. There's a couple of people over there that I was introduced to. They weren't famous back then, but they were famous now. And
Sure.
so
So
very, very
how
strong
long did
guy.
it take you from white belt to black?
10 years,
10 years?
about 2007, and then in 2017, I was lucky enough to win the World's Masters. And I was awarded my black belt on the podium, and it was a real honor at that time, right? So,
Sure. Sure. Yeah, because you compete. So since you mentioned competition, you're known as a pretty avid competitor in Toronto and all
no,
over.
not right now. Basically, I'm slowing down, but I pick and choose which tournaments to go to based upon, I guess, if I was about like 4 or 5 years younger, if also I didn't have a school, if many things are happening in my life that basically, if I didn't have it, I would be busy just competing, traveling the world and just competing.
Sure. So did you compete all the way through, like at all your belts?
All my belts. I made sure that I have experience in all the belts, and basically I don't think I ever want to quit competing. Maybe when I'm like 80 or 90 years old, I'll still be competing
Sure.
once in a blue moon, just to because I do believe that you're learning an art in which you need to test yourself at all times. I want to be able to utilize it to see if it works, and I like the preparation aspect of it. I like the goal setting of competing because of the fact that it helps me in, I guess, in my personal life as well. It helps me prepare for events that are happening in the future. To what do I need to do for myself to prepare for the event? So it's very important that we have that mindset in order for our jiu-jitsu to improve and also our lives to improve as well. So I
Yeah,
took the lessons from it, right? So.
I agree with you 100%. A lot of people ask me because, like, I started late in my life, right? I started at 38. I'm 44 now, and I've competed quite a bit. Okay, just white and blue, mostly blue, because obviously the majority of my time I've been at blue. I just got my purple now. A lot of people ask me, like, why do you compete so much? Because I compete maybe 4 or 5 times a year, which is more than
That's
the
so
average
good. That's
Masters.
awesome. That's
Yeah,
awesome.
sometimes more. And I always tell them, it's like, yeah, I want to do minimum four. Why? Not because of the number, like quarterly, because it kind of, it's that whole, like you said, it's that whole preparation. If you want to be a hobbyist, there's no problem with that. But I do find that when you're a hobbyist, when you're kind of like, when there's nothing to look forward to, then you can fall into a rut. You just get complacent. You go to the gym, you have a good time with the
Very
guys, the girls.
complacent.
Yeah. And sometimes your jiu-jitsu can plateau. Because you know all your friends, you know what they do, they know what you do, right? Yeah, so you're not really like getting pushed. You're just kind of like, hey, you're having fun, you're staying in shape, but you're not progressing as fast. And I
You're
find,
not progressing
yeah.
the way you want to progress. I want to be able to hit moves just like the pros did, and the pros of now that do. I want to be able to get a proper Cobrinha sweep, for example. I want to be able to use a De La Hiva, an advanced a lasso, those kinds of things. I want to be able to utilize entries into certain leg locks or certain holds. I want to be able to try to see if I could replicate that at the highest level. If I could replicate that at black belt, could I replicate it when you are under duress or when there's
Yes.
pressure under on you? Are you able to think clearly and also execute techniques that you have learned in the past or techniques that you're working on? So I usually look at the technique, replicate it, or try to use it on white belts first, get the experience from it, see what
Sure.
they do. And then after that, if it works on them, try to perfect it and then try to see if it works on purple belts, brown belts, blue belts, black belts, those kinds of things. So that's my goal. I want to be able to see if the techniques that I'm learning are actually be combat tested. Very,
Yes.
very important to see if it actually works.
Yeah, and you only know that when you go up against people you don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And you get to see what adjustments that you have to make, and also what are the permutations of different types of defenses that they will come up with, and also basically what you have to work on for yourself in regards to how to lead the person into those techniques. That's very, very
Sure.
important to me.
I can see that. And also another aspect of like competing as well, like a lot of people don't talk about, is that beyond your own personal game that everybody kind of works on, there's also like a greater jiu-jitsu community, and there are
There
trends,
is.
right?
There
There
is.
are trends, right? Like there's you know, when you're in your own gym, okay, your own gym might be doing working on specific things. Maybe our own gym has certain strengths, certain weaknesses. Nobody's perfect. But when you go out there and you visit other places, you visit other towns or cities, and then you say, oh, well, you know, maybe there's a new trend happening in jiu-jitsu, right? Like this is a, you know, there's new moves that are kind of taking the world by storm, you know, like, and then you become aware of those things, like where jiu-jitsu is going as a whole, right? And then you have to prepare for that because, you know, if your gym never did leg locks, for example, right, or doesn't do leg locks, and then you go to Masters Worlds or Masters North America, whatever, and everybody's doing leg locks, you're like, okay, well, now I have a hole in my game, and I need to go back and plug that hole, or else I'm gonna have a deficiency, right?
It's true. It's
Yeah.
true. Jiu-jitsu to me is like fashion, in which things that are old become new and things that are new become old again. You know,
Yes.
like I used to remember when I just got into jiu-jitsu by 2011, 2012, I see a trend of the Berimbolos going. And then after that, I noticed like later on, I think in 2015, 2017, that's when leg locks came in. And then now, what I'm spamming right now, what I'm trying to learn right now is what a friend of mine, Professor Darson Hemmings, basically is doing. He's spamming everybody and giving a lot of people PTSD by using the Barato Plata. And I'm like thinking,
Yeah.
I gotta learn this. I gotta start using it. I gotta start spamming this on my students as well. And basically, it's so effective how he sets it up. He's very innovative in regards to how to utilize it and lead people into that predicament of either saving your arm or getting choked out or basically getting swept. So I like that concept. I like that trend right now. So I'm using that. I'm using other things as well, and I'm making a combination to make it my own. You
Sure.
know what I mean? And
Yeah.
so I gotta give props to the people that helped me out in regards to the positions, submissions, and escapes, whatever it is, you know, I really like it.
Nice. So you mentioned like teaching. So how when you got did you start teaching before you got your black belt or afterwards?
Before I got my black belt, I think I was lucky enough that my professor gave me the opportunity to start teaching at Kyokushin School in North York back when I think in 2014. In 2014, he told me there's a position that opened at the Kyokushin School up north under Sensei Steve Fogarathy in contact kicks, CKMA. That's the name of it, contact kicks martial art. Very, very good school. I'll be honest with you, it's one of those martial arts that's painful, very, very painful. Just like Muay Thai, it's painful. I think Kyokushin is more painful because of the fact that you end up becoming like tanks in front of each other and see who could bear the pain the most. All they do is it's bare knuckle shin padless, and what you're doing is conditioning your body to be able to take hits and give hits as well, or punching and kicking the other person. And it's a tough martial art, Kyokushin. I'll be honest with you. I have so much respect for people who do Kyokushin karate. I have so much respect for people who do Muay Thai. And these are the kind of striking arts that I don't want to delve into because of the fact that I think I have a limited amount of time, and also the recovery for it. The older I get, the longer
Sure.
your recovery periods become.
Yes, it's true. So you started there, and then when did you start teaching BJJ?
I started teaching BJJ in the Kyokushin school.
Oh, the same place.
So,
Okay, so you weren't doing karate, you were doing BJJ at that club. Okay.
yes, I was. But I got the taste of Kyokushin, and it's something that some people would resonate with. It resonated with me, but I don't want to do it because of the fact
Sure.
that I don't want to go to like jiu-jitsu has a soft kind of pain, you know. Kyokushin striking martial arts, it's instant pain, and it takes a while in order for your body to recover from it, you know, after a session.
Sure. So then, so you taught there. How long did you teach there for?
I taught there for, I think, from 2014 to 2019. And it was more of a passion project for me. I wanted to learn how to teach. I wanted to learn how to structure classes, how to develop curriculums. And I did that all on my own through research and trial and error, and also implementing it in classes with my students. And I took the lessons that I learned from Marco seriously. And even though I was teaching, I was always learning. I was still coming into the body of 4HQ, which was at that time Dufferin and Eglinton. And yeah, I did not stop learning until now. I'm still learning from other people, you know?
Sure. When did you start teaching at Rev?
I started teaching in Rev at 2019. Not quite sure if it's like in February or January. I'm not quite sure, but during that time, 2019, and I remember I was preparing also for the 2019 World's Nogi. Yeah, and basically, I think I finished competing there, and that's when I started working with Joel.
Yeah, but you didn't have a lot of time though, because then we had COVID. Right?
Yes, I
So it's
mean,
like it right after.
the funny thing is basically when COVID hit us, I didn't stop training. I didn't stop teaching. I was able to train and teach at a friend's house in the basement. Can you imagine like about 10, 15 cars parked outside of a house, and which all of us are like huddling with masks, running down into a basement. And in the basement, we roll, we learn, we teach. I don't know, those kinds of things. It was kind of interesting at that time because we had neighbors that were always looking in and out at our houses, trying to see who's coming in and who's going out. We were kind of afraid that there might be a raid happening to us at that time. And it brought us close, brought us real close, you know. And I know what's this during the COVID times, it's kind of tough and rough for some people. A lot of people lost family members. A lot of people lost their jobs, their livelihoods. I've known that so many gyms have closed down as well, and that was the sad time for some people. But then we also got to look at the bright side of things as well. Brought a lot of families closer together. People get to value each other at that time. And also, it brought friends closer to as well. You get to see who your true friends are.
Well, this is this podcast wouldn't exist because of that. Like, the whole bunker, right? Was like
There
that
you go.
the whole premise was at the beginning of my journey, which was right before COVID started. You know, that the whole thing was that I barely got 4 months of training before COVID hit, and then a lot of my formative time was setting up this kind of like, yeah, secret bunker group at the church, and having and being blessed enough to have enough good friends to come through, and we continued training and learning so that there was no break in our training. So then, you know, when things reopened, a lot of other people were kind of sitting around doing nothing, but we were kind of just, you know, that was really formative years for me, and it created like a such a strong bond. And then that turned into the tournament, which would, you know, the charity tournament we do now and in every year. And you know, so all that, like, you know, for me, if COVID hadn't happened, I don't know, like, it would have been a different journey, but I don't know if it would have been as good as it was. So it was a blessing personally for me. But, you know, like,
I understand. You never know. It's a should have, could have, would have situations,
yeah.
Things could have gotten just as good or even better had the pandemic not happened. But
Sure.
then I wouldn't trade what I have right now for what could have
Sure.
the situation back then.
Sure. Sure. So afterwards, so then, like, of course, like, after, you know, we all went through COVID. That was a horrible, you know, again, good and bad, but like a lot of difficulties with everybody. Then you had the opportunity to open Vaughn BJJ, which is awesome. And I went to the first, you know, I visited both locations. Now you're in a second location, but like, you first started off at a smaller location. Yes.
I was at that dance school. I was a surprising thing is basically okay. I could give you the rundown of what had happened.
Yeah, sure.
Up in Vaughan, there was Up in Vaughan, the rev location over there, they had a business divorce. And during the business divorce, I was left with the new owner of Rev. They were going to rename it Glory MMA. I'll be honest, I didn't like the guy. I didn't like the guy. I didn't like the way he treated me. I didn't like the way he treated the staff. I didn't like the way he treated customers. I didn't like the way he looked down on me and devalued me from all my hard work and said that this is your rate, this is who you are and what you're going to be teaching. I didn't like that. So I think it was October of 2021 that I said to him, I don't want to work with you. Okay. And I ended up teaching in the basement. And the funny thing is, during that time, my wife even said to me, like, listen, I don't want you working with him. You might as well start up your own school. And I and a couple of friends basically spoke with each other. And I said to them that I want to open up the school. And surprisingly, things happen in your life that a lot of things happen serendipitously, either serendipitously or you've been blessed with it and you have to go with it. You can't deny, I guess, your fate or what is destined to you or what is given to you by God, right? And I believe in that very, very much. And the more that you fight against it, the more that more miserable that your life will be. And so I just took the leap of faith in regards to it. Within, I think, 10 days, I was able to find a place. And before that, And no, during the time when I found the place, I was able to find Lieni, which is this lovely lady that owns Jazz Be Nimble. It's a dance school, and she had a place up upstairs that, because of COVID, killed off a lot of her
Students.
clients and
Yeah.
also her students. And so I contacted her. I wanted to meet up with her, and the moment that we met, it was such a great fit. She was a lovely lady. She was able to accommodate me in regards to the facility. Within 5 days after that, my professor basically told me that he had mats for sale. Contacted him right away. I picked up those mats, and the funny thing is, those mats were the same mats that I was training in for like the last 15 years, 16 years as well. Basically, like I bought them at a great rate, and basically by October 31st, Halloween of 2021, myself and 18 other guys that were former Rev members and also friends of mine as well in within the jiu-jitsu community came out and helped me set up this gym. And so by November 1st, we were able to have our first class. And it
Sure.
was just 18 of us, but out of those 18 people, we were able to grow by January of next year of 2022. That's when we had our first kids classes as well. And through word of mouth and the hushed whispers during that time, because it was still COVID at the time, I was able to acquire more and more students to join the gym. I contacted my old students from Contact Kicks as well, and they joined me as well. So it grew exponentially in regards to that. Within, I think, my first year from 18 people, we grew up to, I think, 75 people right there and then.
Well,
Was surprising. It was really, really surprising in regards to that, how fast that gym grew.
yeah, and nice vibes too, like nice people too. Like,
Yes.
you know, of course you want good culture, right? And like I've been up there, I went up to that location multiple times. You're always gracious enough to have an open mat on Fridays,
Yes.
which is so nice to have your doors open to like everybody to come. And so I would come up quite a bit, and yeah, the people are just really nice, easygoing, you know, don't want to kill you, you know,
Yeah, that's true.
but good and competitive, like, and you know, and like
Very competitive.
challenge you.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's great. Yeah. And then you were there for what, like 2 years before you went, because now you're at a new location, which is awesome.
Yes. So in December of 2023,
Three or four. Oh yeah, three, yeah.
2024, right?
It was
No,
right before
2025
2024
right
started.
now. Yeah,
I
so
think so.
there, I think December 2nd of 2024, that's when we moved over to the new location, which is in Rocco Parkway.
Yeah.
And yeah, it took a while, but yeah, I guess, well, not too. I was happy. I'm happy in regards to the move. December 2nd, basically, I was able to, me and my team were able to acquire the location in Rocco Parkway, and that's
Yeah,
where we moved. Yeah.
for those who haven't been there, it's like a proper, you know, full facility. It's really nice. It's modern. Like, it looks real good.
Well,
Yeah,
thank you.
it's
Thank you.
yeah. I like the layout. It's just nice. You go in. Like, don't
Yeah.
get me wrong. The old place was great too, right? Like, it had charm. It had like, you know.
It did. I kind of like that place. And the funny thing is basically that place, I remember we started off with just one room, and then we were able to acquire another room. Then we were able to acquire the room downstairs. Basically, that dance school ended up becoming more of a martial arts school.
Yeah.
But it's still there. It still had this dance its dance program, and my daughter still goes there, so I'm kind of happy that we are, even though I left that place, that that I still have contact with Jazz Be Nimble. So I'm
Sure.
happy with that school.
Nice. Very nice. That's good. Like, this is good. Like, this is a wonderful thing. And You know, you see, again, we were saying COVID was hard for so many people, but it also spawned a lot of things and opportunities, right? Because, like, even like my current gym, JT6, right? Same kind of thing. It grew out of COVID, right? Same concept, right? Secret training, opportunity, you know, and then it just grew out of that. So there's a lot of good that came out of it, and it just adds. I think it adds to the jiu-jitsu community. For you, it was good because, like you said, there was like a vacuum in the north, like the whole area there. It needed a good gym, you know, for that area. So I'm glad, and I hope that it keeps growing for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Same thing
with you. I have huge respect for Nick Reyes and also his team. Another person that I know for sure that opened up and is successful is King Jiu-Jitsu as well. And then there's also, what's that school? New Market with Tiago Bergson. Really nice school. Very, very good people. You know, like solid team over there as well. And we also see United Grappling around here as well. Good people as well. They come and visit me once in a while, every Friday, I guess, for our open mats. Who else is there? A lot of people from different places. And surprisingly, you know what's funny? Like, I consider myself okay in regards to jiu-jitsu play. I'm not joking. Like, every time I look at other people's accomplishments and their training and also the way they move, the way they teach, I envy them. I want to be like them. I want to be, I want to learn from them, right? And so, funny thing is, basically, I have weird people coming in from Brazil, from Japan, from other places in the world, and they are like shocked by the way I teach or the way I run my classes or something like that. And I'm like thinking, I'm just a second degree. I'm just like a rooster weight. I don't think I'm that technical or that good, but these people are like giving me praises. And I'm like, okay. And I'm just surprised by it. I'm just surprised by the amount of people with like really good lineages, really good schools, really good technique, and also personalities as well would come and visit my school and reciprocate by telling me that how good our school is and how good our teachers are. So I'm very blessed with that, you know.
And you should take their praise because, you know, listen, we it's good for us to be hard on ourselves and to try to practice humility at all times. And so really, the only test, I guess the test or the only measure that we have is when other people kind of recognize it, right? Because we're biased when we look at ourselves. It's hard to to see.
We're hard on ourselves, you know.
Or some people are too good, too easy on themselves. Either way, it's a skewed reality of what we're actually doing, right? This is why in jiu-jitsu, you know, your sensei is the one who gives you the belt, right? So it's not, you don't give the belt to yourself. Like,
No.
So, you know, it's somebody else who needs to recognize it in you, right? Like, because they're more objective, right?
So I guess so.
Yeah, well, you hope so. Okay. Well, I guess I'll ask you one more question because, like, we are coming up close to an hour. I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I really appreciate the time that you've given.
Thank you.
But so I guess I do ask this question for everybody. Out of, you know, if you look back on your whole kind of jiu-jitsu journey up to this point, maybe what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced along the way? Like, whether they be physical challenges, personal challenges, like, what kind of, were there any obstacles that kind of made it difficult that you had to overcome?
I guess a little bit of drama, that's it. Those are the things that basically you need to stay away from, right? If you want to be successful in any endeavor that you have, stay away from the drama, stay away from the politics, stay away from the things that basically you can't do anything about, you know? Over the years, you know, I guess by doing jiu-jitsu, you're going to meet a lot of people with a lot of dramas, a lot of problems, a lot of people that complain. And you have to stay away from those people. You really have to stay away from those people or some of the problems that they happen to have because of the fact that it's going to derail you. It's going to derail you in regards to your pursuit of doing jiu-jitsu. You want to be surrounded with good people that are gonna challenge you, gonna respect you, gonna also like light a fire up your ass in regards to what you need to do. So I don't mind those people, but I do believe that the more you stay away from the stupid little dramas and I guess the politics of jiu-jitsu, the better and the more peaceful that you're going to be. You know, I'd rather just pursue my own thing than to listen to things that are not going to be beneficial for you.
Sure.
You know? So that's my only thing. I can't think of anything else, because any problems that I did, that I faced in jiu-jitsu, I used jiu-jitsu to get out of it or to solve the problem. What I mean by that is, jiu-jitsu is not just the physical aspect. You could also use verbal jiu-jitsu or basically psychological jiu-jitsu when dealing with people, right? So I do believe that jiu-jitsu gives you the tools in order for you to take events in and either redirect them or use it to your advantage.
Yes.
Just like what happened to us during COVID, you know? That's a huge problem that came to us. And what did we do? We analyzed the problem. We come up with a solution and then we implement it, right? So there you go.
Sure. Yeah, I think like the old school, it's changing too. Like when you talk about drama, it's like, and I know what you're talking about, but you know, everybody knows like in the jiu-jitsu community. But you know, I think it's changing too. Like the older days, it was much more adversarial, like with all
it
martial
was.
Arts. With all
it
martial
was.
Arts,
A lot of people were very close-minded.
It happens. It still happens, and it happens across martial arts, not just jiu-jitsu. But like you know, this kind of like territorial stuff. I get it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not a business owner. I'm not a gym owner, so I don't understand. But I can sympathize that. Yeah, you have a business. You need to run it. You need to feed your family. You need to do all those things that are really important to you because it is your business, right?
It is.
But there needs to be, I personally think, like as a student and also as a, I don't want to use the word customer, but you know, that's what I am, right? Like I pay a fee, right? So I can come and I can learn from great instructors, right? That's the product that you're providing. You're providing mentorship, you're providing knowledge, you're providing, but also I think gym owners now are starting to learn, especially the younger ones, the newer generation, that yes, there'll be some competition, but you can't escape contact with the greater community.
Yep.
And you have to be like, if you're confident in your product, in your ability to teach, and in your community, you shouldn't be afraid, right?
You shouldn't be. You shouldn't be.
You'll attract people naturally, and you'll lose some people, but then you'll gain other people. And I think like if you're more open like that, the gyms that are more open, I'm noticing, like, because you know, I know a lot of different people over the years now that I've met, I've been blessed to meet, and I've cross trained a lot of different places. That evil word, the cross training, right? But I noticed that the people who are more laid back, the people who are open, the people who do open mats, you know, the people who open their doors, they're doing better.
I guess so. Yeah.
Than people who are closed, right? So you know, I think it all works out, and the more people we can get into jiu-jitsu, the better, right?
Yes.
So that's there's a lot of people in the GTA. Yeah. There's plenty to go around. I think if we're good at what we do and we're open, I think we'll attract lots of people. So
as much as it is, it's weird because our sport, okay, I'll be honest with you, it's tough. It's like one less than 1% of the universe or the world could ever do jiu-jitsu or even reach up to the black belt, even to the point where we study it and train in it, right? Like, think about it. Like, out of the billions of people in the world right there and then, we're like less than, I don't know, less than a million people, I guess, that are black belts, you know?
Yes.
So,
well, what do they say? 90% of white belts don't go to blue.
Yep.
And then from those 10% that do go to blue, it's something like 1.5 to 2% make it to black.
Yes.
So that's very, very high attrition. Let's not
Very, very
forget.
high.
Yeah.
Very high. You know, so like the people that makes it, I don't know, I'll be honest with you in saying this as well. You'll never meet a normal black belt. You'll never meet a person that reached black belt, and there's always something cuckoo about them. I know for sure. I got my quirks. I got I'm crazy at certain things. Even my students tell me that, right? But yeah, it takes a special person to make it to the higher ranks. Just getting a purple belt alone, just like you. Congratulations to your purple, you know.
Thank you.
How long did it take you to get your purple?
Well,
Around
it took 5.5 years, just
five.
over five and a half years.
That's it.
And you have to be a little cuckoo. Like I'm waking up when I get up at 5 a.m. so I can go to six, my wife's like, "You're
Yep.
insane. You're a crazy
Exactly.
person."
The same
I'm
thing
like
when people, yeah, I got you. Like, you know, sometimes people want can't stand you shine.
Yeah.
Can't stand you to shine. That means basically, like, you're doing jiu-jitsu, you're doing well. People are gonna say, "Well, just stay home. You don't need to do that. You've already won this. You already did that. Why do you still go on? Why do you still continue?" And you tell them, like, "Listen, because I'm still alive, I can still do it. I love what I'm doing, and basically, it's my choice of what I want to do." And then people can't bear that.
Yeah.
Can't stand seeing you succeed. Can't stand seeing you do well or achieve greater things, because I think sometimes it is partially they feel inferior or they wish they could do something like that. I don't know what it is, you know, but I do believe that if you're good at something, keep doing it. Keep doing
Yes.
it. Keep doing it to your best of your ability. See what you could else can you do. So you're good at doing it. Can you replicate it? Can you pass it down to other people? Can you show other people how to be better than you? You know, and that's what my goal is right now. I want to be able to instill this knowledge, because I know for sure, like, I'm aging, you know, like basically I'm more than half a century right now. And basically from there, I'm not gonna last long. Even my blue belts and my blue belts are starting to, you know,
Give you
kill me.
problems.
No, they're out to kill me, you know, and I know for sure, like a blue belt killing me, that's crazy. Yet it's real. It's life. It's you're teaching people. Basically, what you're doing is teaching people how to bite you. Okay. And the moment that they do bite you and you feel it, to me, I'm happy about it because I did my job. Other people, they're not gonna understand it. They don't understand the fact that some people don't want their students or other people to be better than them. My job, I want them to be way better. I want them
That's
to
the
make
goal.
stories. Yeah.
That's the
I
goal.
want, yeah. But also, like, I want them to have stories, because no man or woman wants to be with somebody with no stories. True. You know, and so that's what I'm doing right now. I'm looking at my students, and basically, I want them to have stories to make them interesting enough so that other people would be attracted towards them. Is that fair?
Yeah,
Yeah.
100%.
And so that's kind of like my goal. I enjoy watching people. I have kids over here that started off when they were 11. Now, like, they're 20 or something like that, or they're 18 or 19. Absolute killers. Absolute killers, you know? And yeah, I want them to make stories. I want them to go out there, make stories. Yeah.
On that note, I think that's a wonderful way to wrap it up, and that's a good sentiment at the end there. Make stories. That's a good one. I'm gonna put that as the title of the podcast of this
That's
episode.
amazing. Good.
Professor, thank you very much. Like, I really, really appreciate the time. I always appreciate your time, because you've always been generous. Every time I've ever come up, I've asked you a question, I needed help with something, I was prepping for a comp. You've always taken the time, and you're not obligated to. So, you know, just it's a testament to the kind of person you are. You've taken the time to show me. I remember you met my daughter, almost 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Once at her, it was her first comp, and you took the time to stop and, give her some pointers, and she remembers that. She was intimidated by your intensity.
I get you. I
But
get
talking
you. I
about
can be very intense.
the cuckoo-ness of us all, right? Like,
Yes.
you looked at her and you're like, "What are you gonna do? What's your plan? How are you gonna strike first?"
Yes.
And she's like, she's the first time. And she goes, "He's intense, Daddy." I'm like, "Yeah, that's why he's good." I go, "And you gotta be intense too." I go, "You if you wanna like you gotta strike first, right?" No, but like it's in all honesty though, I really appreciate you spending your time and all the wisdom you imparted to me. And I look forward to continuing the friendship and seeing you for many, many years to come. And no, I wish you all the I don't want to say luck because luck has nothing to do with it, but rather success in everything you're doing and continuing on, just contributing to our wonderful community here in Toronto.
Brother, I really appreciate you calling me and basically telling me about this and taking the time out just to find out more about me. I'll be honest, I don't see myself to be, everything that you say that I am. But I really appreciate those sentimental words and kind words, really
Thank you.
appreciate it.
I appreciate you too. Thank you, Professor Mike, and to everybody listening. We thank you for all listening, and we will see everybody next week with our next guest. But until then, take care, everyone. Keep training.
Thanks for listening to the Bunker Jiu-Jitsu podcast. Feel free to follow us on Instagram and YouTube. And if you want to reach out with any questions or if you're interested in being on the show, feel free to email us at bunkerjiu-jitsu@gmail.com. Thanks and take care.